And good Monday morning. This is Mountain Money on KPCW. It's September 18th, 2017. I'm Renee Bodley here with my co-host Doug Wells. Good morning, Doug.
Good morning. Beautiful weekend once we got that rain out of the way on Friday, wasn't it?
Yes, yeah, Saturday and Sunday were wonderful. Autumn Aloft was spectacular. Did you see it?
I did. I went Sunday morning and it was just amazing. And what a great event for Park City. I mean, it was just packed out there.
Really pretty. And Main Street on Saturday night when they did that candlestick glow was really special. But man, if you got too close to those flames, you felt the heat.
They get warm, that's for sure.
We've got a great show lined up for our listeners this morning. We're going to lead the hour with Ryan Starks. He's the director of Wasatch CAPS. CAPS is a really neat new program in the Heber Valley for students to team up with companies and get some real-life experience. How is it different from an internship? We will find out from Mr. Starks.
And then our second guest is a local business. I believe they started here. They're in several different ski resort towns. We've all seen their vans around. Ski Butler, and I think of them as a Park City, United States location, but they've got big plans to expand actually worldwide, and they've begun on those plans. So stay tuned. We've got Bryn Carey from Ski Butler to come and talk to us about that. And then our final guest is going to be Gina Elise. And believe it or not, she started a company. It's a fun name, Barbarian Barbering Company, which is a barbershop on Main Street. And it's nice to have a barbershop on Main Street. So we're going to hear from Gina about that. You're listening to Mountain Money on KPCW. Please stay tuned. We'll be back in a moment.
This is Chris Robinson with Berkshire Hathaway Home Services, Utah Properties. KPCW is one of the many nonprofits our agents and company support. They are the backbone of Summit and Wasatch counties in our incredible community. More info at bhhsutah.com.
Being a member of the Park City Chamber Bureau is a great investment for your business and provides a wide array of benefits. We promote your business, provide networking and educational opportunities, and even have benefit programs for you and your employees. For more information, visit us online at visitparkcity.com or call us at 649-6100. The Park City Chamber Bureau is a nonprofit organization and a proud supporter of KPCW.
And welcome back to Mountain Money. I'm Renee Bodley here with my co-host Doug Wells. We're going to start this hour with one of my favorite people in the Heber Valley. He's the executive director of the Wasatch Chamber of Commerce, Heber Valley Chamber of Commerce, excuse me. It's Ryan Starks. But Ryan, you're joining us wearing a different hat this morning as the director of Wasatch CAPS. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Renee. Good morning, Doug. How are you?
We are doing great this sunny morning. Let's start with Wasatch CAPS. CAPS stands for what?
CAPS stands for the Center for Advanced Professional Studies.
And how did it start?
Well, it originated in the Kansas City area of Missouri about several years ago. And it was kind of the result of innovators partnering with educators looking for an outcome where students can gain not only academic experience when they graduate high school, but also real-life professional experience. And this model blossomed quite well. This Blue Valley School District in the Kansas City area has five high schools that filter into this program. And so they kind of did a test model to determine, is this something of value? And the results have just been overwhelming. They've been very positive. And so this pilot program in Kansas City kind of set the standard for the country. And so other school districts from around the United States have gone back and they've seen what Blue Valley's done. And then they've implemented their own version of CAPS, and it's not exactly the same, but for the most part, the principles are there, they remain, and that's that students are wanting this opportunity to develop these professionalism skills. And Blue Valley set the standard, and so a few years back, some leaders in Wasatch County, both business leaders and academic leaders, put their heads together and said, you know, for years we feel like something's been missing. We have so much talent, so many students that graduate high school, but then what? Isn't there something that we can do to supplement their learning experience by providing hands-on experience? So a few of us went back to Blue Valley, learned about their program, and determined that maybe it's something that we should do here in our county as well.
So give us an example. What are some of the professions that you train folks for?
Yeah, well, we feel like the purpose of the program really is to help drive the 21st century skills that are sorely needed. We find today that many of our students can graduate with a high GPA, but when it comes to actually being employable, they're having a lot more challenges. And so we're focusing on the creativity, innovation, critical thinking, problem solving, communication, and collaboration. That's kind of the core of our desired outcomes for the students. We feel like if they can develop these soft skills, then they'll be able to get that job, and they'll not only be able to get the job, but be able to succeed quite well.
And how is it different from an internship?
Well, an internship, we would send students typically, or a student would show up to the place of work for an employer and shadow and get a cup of coffee and staple papers and do maybe work that's very entry level, or, you know, it's not really going to develop their professionalism. With CAPS, the difference is we go out and we find a business to sponsor a project. We bring that project back to the students, and they're put into a team of three or four students. And then they work on that as if they're a project manager or as if the company has hired them as consultants. So, for example, last year we partnered with the Utah Jazz. And the Jazz, maybe you've seen, have a license plate that has the Utah Jazz logo on it, the Jazz Note.
Yeah.
And they said, well, we feel like this is a good program, but we want to be able to get the word out more. And so we need to understand where are clients coming from, those who actually have this note on the back of their car, and then give us some recommendations as to what we could do to improve the program. So we had three students, two seniors and one junior in high school, two boys and one girl, who got to work, and they started by contacting each DMV throughout the state of Utah and researching how many people have actually purchased the Utah Jazz license plate. Then they built the database, and then they were able to kind of tell the story that the majority of people who had the license plate came from Salt Lake County, Utah County, or Davis County. And then they put together an assessment of, you know, their current marketing plans, what they could do to improve it. And kind of at the culmination, when they presented their case back to the Utah Jazz executive team, they asked this question. The students asked the Jazz leadership, now, isn't it true that you have a Jazz bear that drives around on a Harley Davidson during the Jazz game? And the management said, yeah, that's true. Well, isn't it true that that Harley Davidson doesn't even have the Jazz note on the license plate? And you could just see their face. And it was funny because they realized, yeah, we need to do a better job internally if we expect other people to do it. So the students recommend that the Jazz bear kind of be the leader of this campaign on his very own Harley. And then they gave some other social media recommendations and some creative marketing ideas. And I think the Jazz were just blown away. They said, you exceeded our expectations. We thought it was going to be, you know, when we heard juniors and seniors in high school, we had a certain expectation, but you blew us away. We're finding that that's been the case throughout.
That's great, and that's a fun example. It's a fun organization to do work for. It helps the kids with the experience as well. It's great to have something like that on your resume when you're going to look for a job. Now, I think most of our listeners at some point in their life have done an internship. And for many folks, it's not as good of an experience as it could be, right? It for an internship program to work, the company has to put a lot of time into the student. And oftentimes they just don't have the luxury of doing that. Why is it important that you take the experience out of the company? I mean, it's a partnership, mm-hmm. as you said, but why is it important to have that classroom setting coupled with that the company? What can you do in the, and I'm using the word classroom, that's probably not the right mm-hmm. term, but what can you do in the school piece of it that would be difficult to do at the company setting?
Well, that's a good question. And so kind of the premise of the program is that our students, and we have 100 students this semester, and they cover 5 different kind of course areas. And so we have roughly about 20 per course. They leave Wasatch High School every other day for two class periods, and we've built out a new kind of a high-tech campus, so to speak. We partnered with Utah Valley University here in Heber and discovered that they had 8,100 square feet of unfinished space. So we were able to raise the money and build this high-tech campus that mimics something that you would see at Adobe or one of these high-tech companies. And so now the students are not just stuck in school, so to speak. They're going somewhere better, somewhere bigger, somewhere higher. And they show up to this class where they report to a teacher. And that's part of it. Part of the goal is to create accountability. The teacher works with the students, not in the traditional lecture style of learning, but more of an accountability. Each student has to complete a project management form where they meet certain milestones. They check in with their clients via email or via phone call every week or every 2 weeks. And then they hold each other accountable as well. So I think how it differs from a traditional internship is the accountability piece. The students have to check in. They're accountable to their teachers. But then we also bring in high-level executives and professionals who maybe have experience in different fields. And these people actually mentor the students. So rather than just, you know, beat their heads against the wall and hope that they can figure out the answer to the problem, our mentors will come in and sit down and say, well, have you thought about this? And, you know, when I was an executive in this company, here's a similar challenge we had. Here's how we overcame it. So they're able to learn from really some of the best of the best. Today, we actually have a guest lecturer coming, Jack Zanger, who lives in Midway, who's a well-known business executive here in Utah, and he's just one of many people that really add to that experience.
Ryan, I really liked at the start of our conversation how you mentioned this helps the students develop critical thinking skills. Because so often with an internship program or with some students that are being placed in businesses, it tends to be more vocational. And I've always felt like, especially with the journalism internships that I've seen, someone might learn how to operate the camera or operate the editing system, but mm-hmm. that's technology that will be outdated by that time that student's looking for a full-time job. So that ability to help them think for themselves, I think, is really important in this project. Have you had some things, some businesses where it has not been a good fit?
Yeah, so we average roughly 35 projects per semester, and we're in our third semester right now, so we just officially started last year. And during that first semester, as we were transitioning into the new 8,100 square foot facility, there was some confusion over projects and accountability. We did have one partner that set up a meeting, and the students, for whatever reason, didn't show up. But the nice thing about the program is we encourage our partners to give honest feedback. And so this partner, who runs a tech company, sat down with his three students after missing, you know, the meeting and really had a heart-to-heart with them and said, if you were my employees, you would have been fired. You didn't check in. You missed your deadlines. And I believe it was a real turning point for the students because they realized this is the real world. They can't afford to, you know, have a tardy in school, for example. There are real deadlines and real things depending on the outcome of the project. So we've had some learning opportunities. That's what we like to call it, but certainly have been there. And as we look at the students at the beginning of the semester and then as we survey them at the end of the semester, across the board we're finding that they are becoming better speakers, better communicators, better collaborators, and it's fun to see the evolution of the student throughout the semester.
Yeah, both Renee and I were making eye contact as you said that. That's a great example, and it's a type of life experience that young people is hard to get, but they need exposure to that. You know, most young people are very committed, they're smart, they're passionate about what they want to do when they're done with high school. But it's these little things that can really throw you off. And I say little things because I think mm-hmm. that's where the kids are coming from. It's like, oh, it's not a big deal. We'll just do it next week. Well, in mm-hmm. the real world, it is a big deal. And maybe you get fired. So that's a great example. Thanks for sharing it. I want to go back, Ryan, to something you said earlier about that 8,000 square foot facility that you guys were fortunate to get, build out. You know, Park City does a similar program. There's a CAPS program here. And originally they were talking about like building a new building for this. And I know it was controversial within the town because it was expensive. How important is the facility? Why can you run a great CAPS program without a new facility? And how does the facility itself play a role in the program?
Well, as we researched and collaborated with our counterparts in Blue Valley and Kansas City area, they felt that the building was instrumental in creating that very unique experience. And so we did consider taking some space at the high school, but ultimately felt like for the students to have the best possible experience they could have, we needed them to leave the school and feel like they were going to a place like a college campus or like a place of work. Now, that's what worked for us, and each school district may have its own needs. But for us, we felt like that was instrumental.
And how do you find the businesses that you work with? Do they come to you? Do you go out and recruit them?
Well, it's been interesting because of the first semester or two, we had to go do a lot of cold calling and a lot of presenting to the community. And I think there's just kind of a lack of awareness, like, wait, what is this? And, well, I don't know that I really want to have an intern right now. And we said, well, this isn't an internship. It's just an opportunity for you as the business to offload a project, maybe something that you've wanted to put some manpower behind, but you haven't been able to. And so slowly, I think we kind of came around to the point where they said, okay, well, let's try this out. Now that we're in our second year, we found that a lot of people have contacted us and said, hey, we've heard great things about this program. Any chance that we could sign up for a project? So then we kind of determine, is this a project that would benefit the students and that would be a good fit? If it is, then we move forward with it. And I will say that each project has three parts, kind of as its criteria. There needs to be a research component, a problem-solving component, and then a final deliverable.
If you're just joining us on the phone with us today is Ryan Starks. He's with the Wasatch CAPS program, and we're talking about how that's being implemented in Heber. Renee was asking about how you find the companies and the projects. If folks are listening and they're interested in either volunteering to help out or somebody's got a great project that they think would be a good CAPS program, how do they contact you guys and how do they find out more about the CAPS program?
That's a great question. We have a website that's called wasatchcaps.org, and there's contact information. In fact, there's a page that says request the project. And funny enough, we had a retired heart surgeon come across our page and come to a meeting of ours recently and has requested a meeting. And so today at 2 o'clock, we have a meeting to discuss how a retired heart surgeon can give back and get involved with the program. So...
Well, there can't be too many retired heart surgeons. I suspect that's a friend of mine that I actually was mountain biking with yesterday, and he's always thinking of new and clever things. But we'll let him remain anonymous at that point. But that's fine. I know he's doing something new. So I've got in my notes here that Lieutenant Governor Spencer Cox has made some very supportive comments of the CAPS program. How is this playing out statewide? You know, we have a program here in Park City. You're doing one in Heber. How many programs are statewide?
We actually just have three statewide. So Park City was the first, and Wasatch was the second. And now Roosevelt is looking at doing something as well. So they're kind of in a soft launch. But as our building was being constructed just over a year ago, the Lieutenant Governor came and he brought his staff and the governor's education advisor, and they toured the facility, and they understood the model and kind of our goals. And he was just so complimentary, and he said, this is the future of education in Utah. And then just last week, he actually came back and saw the finished product. And we wrote down a couple of his quotes because he was so excited about what he saw. One of the things he said was, the students would benefit this work-based learning opportunity for years to come. And he also stated that this didn't just happen. This was the result of industry working with education and innovators coming together. And so we kind of feel like that is the model. If it were just education-based alone, I think it could only go so far. But with the partnership with industry, it's really made all the difference.
And real quick, Ron, can you break down the five areas that CAPS participates with, the five areas of business?
Yeah, I sure can. So we have a class in business, marketing, and entrepreneurship. And those projects can, you know, vary widely. We have engineering and industrial design, medicine and health, digital design and software development, and agriculture and environment, which kind of ties into some of our farmlands here in Heber Valley.
Great. And we've just got time probably for one last wrap-up question. We are a business show, and you know, running a school, obviously the goal there is not to be a profitable entity. The goal there is to educate our next generation of citizens for the United States and for the state of Utah. But I'm curious, you know, this is an expensive program. You do need to raise money for that. I know the state has a set amount of money that the schools get per student. So how do you come up with the funding to offer an extra program like this?
Well, as part of the state's initiative to kind of enhance economic development, they came out with a grant program a couple of years ago, and it's called the UCAP grant. And this is a cluster acceleration program. So the state looks at different industries and opportunities, and they kind of play the role of an investor. If somebody applying for a grant can make a case that there's a real economic opportunity and benefit, the state will typically listen. So that's how the funding originated. It was through a grant submission to the state to get kind of lay the groundwork for this program. And the state really liked what they saw. So they actually helped fund kind of the first phase of this. Then it fell on us to go raise additional monies. And so the Wasatch School Board was very supportive, overwhelmingly supportive. I don't think we could have done it without their help. And then through some private donations and contributions as well. And then that's an ongoing conversation that we're having. Next month we have a gentleman who's going to address our students, a well-known business leader here, and he's already asking, what can I do financially to support the program? So we think that it'll just continue to perpetuate, both from students that graduate and both from business leaders that come in. But initially it came from the state and from the school district.
And Ryan, just switching topics real quick from Wasatch CAPS, when people hear the name Ryan Starks, they think about the Heber Valley Chamber of Commerce. How did it go this summer?
It was a fantastic summer. It was great to have a lot of quality events and activities. We have a lot of business development taking place. And so I'd just like to say that it's moving full steam ahead and doesn't seem to be slowing down at any point soon. We kind of track the sales tax, restaurant tax, and hotel data, and all three are continuing to rise. Our sales tax is up about 7% over last year, where our restaurant tax is up over 8%, and then even our hotel tax is up as well by 1%. But that might seem like small numbers, but year after year for the past 5 years, we've made about a 15 to 20% leap in each of those categories. So that means people are coming, they're shopping, means that people are staying in our hotels, and that part of our economy is really clicking in all cylinders.
And you tried some new things this year. The Wasatch Music Festival was at Soldier Hollow. That was the first time, wasn't it?
Yeah, we moved that from Wallsburg and tried that at the Soldier Hollow venue, and they seemed to really like it. I think it's one of those events that'll continue to mature over time.
And
we also had, yeah, go ahead.
How was the sheepdog competition crowds? Were those big?
You know, we wonder each year, is this going to be sustainable and continue its success? But it does. There's just a real magic to the event. And so we had full crowds, full capacity. Labor Day weekend, we did a little analysis. We had a 97% occupancy in our hotels. And just a lot of good things happening.
Yeah, no, my sense is there's a lot of good things happening on the Wasatch side as well as here in Park City. I know as a local here in Park City, I found myself going to Heber much more in the last 12 months than I had in the prior 10 years. So you guys are doing a lot of great things.
Well, we appreciate your support, and I think that goes both ways. We really are connected at the hip, and as we work with our counterparts at the Park City Chamber, you know, they do a great job, and it's fun to kind of send traffic both ways, and hopefully we can continue working together.
That's Ryan Starks, Director of Wasatch CAPS and the Executive Director of the Heber Valley Chamber of Commerce. Thanks for joining us this morning.
Thank you.
And then coming up, don't go away, we are going to talk to Bryn Carey, who started a business in his garage in Park City in 2004. Now he's gone international with his company. We're going to hear his story with Ski Butlers coming right up.
Matt here from San Francisco Design, supporting our local radio station, KPCW. Since 1990, San Francisco Design offers interior design and a mix of European and mountain contemporary home furnishings with store locations in Salt Lake City and Park City on Bonanza Drive. On the web at sanfrandesign.com. San Francisco Design, love your home.
Whitney Wall here from Park City Mountain and KPCW's sponsor. Park City Mountain's Epic Promise recently committed to a net zero footprint by 2030. The environment is our business. By 2030, we commit to zero net emissions, zero waste to the landfill, and a zero net operating impact to forests and habitat. More information at epicpromise.com.
Welcome back to Mountain Money on KPCW. In studio with us now is the founder of Ski Butlers, Bryn Carey. Renee mentioned at the end of a previous segment, it was started in Bryn's garage, which is quite a story. Bryn, thank you for joining us.
Yeah, thank you guys for having me.
So, you know, we see your vans all over town now. You've got a really strong presence. I've seen where you guys park the vans in the summertime. You don't need to use the vans as much, and there's a lot of vans out there. But let's start with just briefly for folks that don't know, what does Ski Butlers do? But then I want you to talk about how you came up with the idea of this in the first place.
Yeah, so Ski Butlers, we deliver ski rentals. So instead of traveling across the country and going to a busy rental shop and trying to get to your ski school lesson on time, we deliver to the comfort of your accommodations. We bring skis, snowboards, helmets, small accessories, and you're good to go. And it's perfect for the family when kids are running around and might not have much attention and people are sitting around the fire, and we just bring one person over. And
you know, skiing is a lot of fun, but there's no way around it. Skiing is a high hassle factor hobby and vacation. So the more you can make it easier for people, I think the better everybody's going to be. So you were probably seeing this 13, 14 years ago. And there's a number of different ways to tackle that hassle factor. What was it about the rental process that made you focus on that?
Well, and I think just to take a step back, I was always an entrepreneur, and I was a senior year at University of New Hampshire, and I was trying to figure out what to do. And I owned Park City Seal Coat. And so I wanted to get back in the ski industry. And so that kind of sparked the idea of trying to find something within the ski industry. But I knew that rentals was one of the biggest hassles. And if we could make this simple, we would solve a huge problem. We would be busy. We would make people's lives easier and have a better vacation. So that's ultimately how we came up with the idea. And really, once the idea struck, it only took me about 5 minutes. We knew that this is something that we had to do and it'd be successful. And it was so successful the first year in Park City that we immediately said, hey, we got to go to Vail, we got to go to Breck, we got to go to Aspen, we got to get to Tahoe. And so we just started spreading our wings and going for it.
And now you have a big announcement. You announced something big last Wednesday.
Yeah, so we've been, internally, we've known about this for a long time. So we're very excited to announce last Wednesday that we're expanding to Europe. So we'll be the first ski rental and delivery company in the world to offer services in Canada, the United States, and Europe. And now we have over 44 worldwide ski resorts, something like 125,000 vertical feet. It's just awesome. We're so excited.
And as you roll these out in other locations, let's hold on Europe for a minute, because I think that's a special situation. But as you're in Breckenridge and Vail and the Aspen and the other locations here, Are those wholly owned, or are those franchised, or what does that rollout model look like for you guys?
Yeah, so I own 7 locations, and the other 5 here in the U.S. are franchised. We only have 3 franchise owners, so one gentleman owns 3 franchises, and the other folks own 1 and 1. So it's really, although we use the term franchise, it's actually a very still small knit company that works very well together. But that the franchising was one way that we could get into all these markets quickly. You know, I didn't have the money or the time to go to 12 North American locations starting from my garage. That's
where I was going with this. Of course, they've all got the Ski Butler name. I'm assuming they all share the same name.
Yeah, so we all have Ski Butlers. We have the same website. We use the same customer database, the same reservation system, the same vans.
Which is awesome, because 1 year somebody might come on vacation to Park City, the next year they might be going to Vail or where else, and so you can take care of them there. The challenge for you as a young entrepreneur and starting a company and growing quickly is keeping up that quality of the experience, because if somebody has a bad experience in Vail, that's going to taint the experience here in Park City as well. How did you go about ensuring the quality?
Well, we definitely had some growing pains because we expanded so fast. And there was a moment when I realized that the customer service that we started on and founded on here in Park City, we weren't living up to the standards everywhere. And at that time, I read a few books, and I rely on a lot of books for ideas and so forth. And I read something about enterprise and how they focus so much on the customer service and the net promoter score. And so we went all in on customer service. We implemented the net promoter score. Our team members get bonuses based on the customer service score. They get promoted based on the customer service score. They can do whatever they need to do without asking a manager to make a customer happy. And so once we implemented that across the company, we didn't have any more customer service issues. We were running fast and taking care of customers. And that is the reason we've been growing, is because people tell their friends, tell their family members, and use us again.
What a novel concept. Good customer service is a good business model.
It's funny how simple it is, but how challenging it can be to actually live that, as we saw. But now that it's our bread and butter, it seems so simple that if you take care of the customers, they'll take care of you.
Which brings up a good point, right? Because it's getting harder and harder every year to hire people here in Park City and other ski towns as the economy has improved. So a large part of the game is finding the right employees and getting them on the team. How do you go about doing that?
Well, our one thing at Ski Butlers is our people. And even before I dive into that, Park City has been a lot easier to hire than a lot of other ski towns across the West. Now we're starting to see Park City kind of fall. The Aspen's always been tough, and Telluride. And Park City is becoming more difficult to hire. However, we bring in people that share our core values, but most importantly, want to pursue their passions in the mountains. And we seek this out mainly from, again, friends and family. Most of the time, sourcing from our team members that we use that worked for us the previous year. But there's something really special about our team. Every January, I'll start talking to our team, and they all come up to me and they go, "Bryn, I didn't know that Ski Butlers was going to be this different. I thought I was just going to a normal ski shop. I thought we're just going to be tuning skis and whatnot." And people come up, they realize that it's different at Ski Butlers, that we want people to grow. We want people to make a difference in the community. We want people to try to figure out a way to stay in the mountain towns and have a career and not have to go back to the city or not have to go back to a 9-to-5 job and make their mother and father proud. We try to prove that living in the mountains and working for Ski Butlers can be something that they can do. And I think because of that, we are able to recruit really easily each and every year. But I will say it takes a lot of effort and a lot of time to hire, but we seem to do a pretty good job at it.
Nick Sargent with the Snow Sports Industries of America spoke to the Sunrise Rotary recently, and he was talking about the demographic trends in the winter sports. And he said, you know, we're seeing with a lot of industries, which is the baby boomers are getting older and millennials don't plan long ski vacations the way maybe the previous generation did. They don't have the luxury, the income to support just going out and skiing for a week. Are you worried about that?
I think the whole industry is worried about that. Our top customer segments are about 45 to 55 is number one, 55 to 65 is number two, and 35 to 45 is number three. So we actually have a lot of young folks using ski butlers, but one thing that's really concerning is a lot of the smaller ski areas where a lot of people learn how to ski, especially back east, are either not have enough money to make snow because of climate change, they have to make too much snow to stay open, or you know, people just aren't skiing at those smaller places anymore. So I think that's a huge, huge long-term problem for the industry.
And climate change is something that you have been outspoken about. Didn't you go to Paris recently?
Went to Paris, I guess that was 2 years ago now, the fall of 2015. My wife, at the time, our four-month-old daughter, we went to the Paris Climate Summit. We participated with the Climate Reality Project and I Am Pro Snow. We went to the World Climate Summit, which was just an event within, which Richard Branson spoke at. Ted Turner was there. We had a panel on snow sports and climate change. We pushed the town of Park City to go 100% renewable, which was awesome. By 2022 and 2032, we've made goals at Ski Butlers to go 100% renewable by 2020 and hopefully our vans by 2025. We just ordered our first electric van from Europe. It's supposed to arrive in November. We've never tested. Driven it, we've never seen it, but we ordered it, and hopefully we can get all of our vans to go electric. We have a Ski Butler's Tesla, which is cool. So climate change, you know, I think part of owning a small business is being able to make a difference in the community and the world, and hopefully with climate change we can help be a part of the solution. It is a big scary deal. Not only are we worried about young folks not skiing, hopefully the young folks have snow one day. I mean, it's that serious.
Yeah, well, there's a whole lot there. I mean, I'm very impressed with how you're thinking about things. I mean, you're still relatively a small company. And to be committed to climate change enough that you go to Paris and do that is just very, very commendable. And I think it's inspirational to other folks here as well. When you put on your hat as a college graduate and thinking about, okay, I want to start a company, I'm going to be doing this, how many of these types of things, you know, sustainability, were important to you to incorporate in your business?
I mean, to be honest, at the time, that probably wasn't a big factor. I was 22. I was trying to figure out how to get Ski Butlers off the ground. However, as you get the company off the ground and you get moving, you realize that you can lead people, and there's nothing better than seeing folks that want to give back. And we like to deliver legendary service to our customers, but we also like to do it to our partners, our team members, and so forth.
And the reason I ask that is I think it helps on so many fronts. I think one of the reasons you've been able to hire the team that you need to provide that customer service is people hear about you getting in the electric van and having a Tesla and going to Paris to fight the battle on climate change and get people to do what they need to do. Those are all things that are resonating with young people today. They don't want to work for some nameless, faceless company. They want to work for a purpose. And it sounds like you've really found this purpose as you've gone.
Yeah, and I think it's a bonus that our team members love all that stuff that we do. But it definitely didn't start there. But, you know, we can change the world. And it's so crazy to think that a little company like Ski Butlers, founded out of a small garage on the top of Main Street here in Park City, has the ability to change the world, but that's the only way that it's ever actually happened.
You know, we're talking about some of these trends. Climate change obviously became much more in the public eye after 2004 when you'd started. But one of the trends that I think really helped your company is, if I'm right, in 2004, you could still take your skis with you on vacation. There was no extra charge. And now it's almost as economical to rent your skis as it is to pay the airline fee coming out and going back. How important was that development to the success of your company?
Yeah, the success of Ski Butlers, but also the success of any ski shop. Traveling with skis is a pain, and then you have to pay for it. You know, it just doesn't make sense. And then, you know, if you're an East Coast skier, your skis might not be perfect for the vacation out here. So then you can rent the nice gear out here, and then we can make it so it's not a hassle. Kind of all those dominoes lined up, and it definitely helped us. I, it's a bummer about the airline baggage fees.
Not for you guys, though.
I guess for all the ski shops, yes.
Bad news for one industry. Good news for you. And now we're seeing some changes in the ski industry with, you know, Vail and the Epic Pass. And, of course, the big news last month with Deer Valley. When you hear news like that, what goes through your mind?
Well, I think we'll have consistency across ski resorts. I think it'll give the consumer, you know, the options for ski passes right now have never been better. I mean, whether you're buying the Mountain Collective or the Epic Pass, or I guess it's the Max Pass is what they call it, I believe, with KSL. I'm not sure exactly what they're
KSL
doing.
Aspen. They need a name.
Yeah, I'm sure they're gonna get their pass. So I think all that's awesome. It's always scary to have too much power in one person's hands. So I think any small business is always worried about that. But I think the resorts that these big groups own, the resorts will be very well run, very well maintained, and hopefully we'll start to bring in younger folks and so forth with cheaper ski passes.
And is that bigger competition for your business when that happens?
Not necessarily. I don't think so. I mean, people that want to use that want ski around delivery are going to use Ski Butlers, and people that want to go to the resort and book through the resort are going to do that. So I think it's okay.
Although there probably is a battle heating up for the share of the wallet with these bigger corporations now owning the ski resort. Well, unfortunately, we need to leave it at that. Our guest this morning is Bryn Carey. He is the founder of Ski Butler, and good luck with your expansion into the Swiss Alps, and thank you for joining us this morning.
French Alps, thank you.
Oh, sorry, French Alps. I think my notes are wrong here. All right, well, on that note, you're listening to Mountain Money on KPCW. We'll be back in a moment. Please stay tuned.
This is Ryan Hoffman, manager at Mountain West Bank, sponsor of KPCW. We're a community bank with a great understanding of our local needs. Mountain West Bank has something unheard of nowadays, but I can't say it on the radio. We're next to the movies near Kearns Boulevard at 649-3369. Division of Glacier Bank, member FDIC, equal housing lender. Cookies on Fridays.
Hi, this is Greg Cropper of Jones Waldo Park City, a Park City law office. I've been a big fan of KPCW since its first broadcast back in 1980. Jones Waldo's been representing clients from Summit and Wasatch counties since 1875. You can find us at joneswaldo.com.
Welcome back to Mountain Money on KPCW. A fun conversation with Bryn Carey, the founder of Ski Butlers. We're going to switch gears now. We're going to go from talking about snow to talking about hair. And normally I'm at a disadvantage when we have a subject like this, but we're actually talking about men's haircuts today. In studio with us now, we have two folks from Barbarian Barbering Company, Gina Elise. I've got your name on my cheat sheet. And then Chelsea, tell us your last name, please.
My name's Chelsea Rose.
Okay, Chelsea. And you guys have started a company called Barbarian Barbering Company on Main Street.
Yes.
Tell us about that. How I don't think Park City had a traditional barbershop on Main Street before you guys. So what was it about the Main Street experience that caused you to say this would be a great place to open a shop like that?
Well, we were here under a different name for the last year and a half. And so now we ended up taking up ownership and fell in love with the locals and fell in love with Park City and thought it'd be a great place to stay.
You know, I thought that was the case because there has been a barbershop for like 2 years.
Right.
What was the name of that location?
Electric Chair.
Okay, Electric Chair, which is also a clever name. And yeah. How did you guys end up taking over ownership?
So we worked for the previous owner, and when his lease ended, he decided to move back to California. So when that happened, we just spoke with the landlords and decided to stick around.
Okay, great. And so is the concept pretty much the same, or have you guys done a pretty big pivot in the types of service and kind of the feel that a client gets when they come for a haircut on Main Street?
Well, I think, so we took 3 days and we remodeled everything. Like, our blood, sweat, and tears kind of went into it. And we kind of made the services a little bit more personable, a little bit fancier, but it's still, you know, kind of, we want it to be the local spot.
So what is the service? I'm under the impression it's some serious manscaping you guys are doing on Main Street.
Yes, we do all blade work. So we do
haircuts, we do design work, we do shaves, straight razor shaves, we do the face, the head, we do eyebrow shaping with a straight razor. Pretty much if there's a blade involved, we will do it.
Sounds scary, actually. Doug, have you ever had a straight blade shave?
Just once. Probably when most men, if they just get it, if they're in their 50s and have just had it once, it's probably on their wedding day, which is when I splurged and did that. So who's your, it's a good question, who's your traditional client that comes in? Is it somebody that's a repeat and they've been coming in for months, or is it like special events?
We're trying to move towards more special events and groomsmen parties and things like that. But what we're doing right now is just the locals, the service people that are all over Park City. And I feel like we've gained their trust pretty well. And yeah.
So it seems like almost every guy has facial hair these days. It's very hipster right to have the beard. Don't see a lot of just straight mustaches. But do you find there are certain trends that you guys need to stay on top of? Does someone come in and you say, and they want just something trimmed up, and you say, look, this has got to go. It's going too far down the neck or something.
We call that the neared, the neck beard.
Oh, the neared. Nice. The neared.
We definitely have to stay on top of trends. This is an industry that changes monthly. There's always something new coming around, and typically men do need some guidance on what would look better or what is on trend, because it's just things that they typically don't pay attention to, and that's fine. That's what we're here for.
What's the hot trend right now?
Oh, beards.
Beards.
Beards. Everyone.
Everyone's got a beard.
People think
you're
if you're
killing
not.
Me because I can't grow
I know,
a beard.
Get it
if I could, yeah, no, I'd love to, but it's just not in my future. So beards are hot. Future. What else?
Beards. Everyone. It's been kind of the trend for a while, the Macklemore haircut, the disconnect. So your hair, kind of like mine. So my hair is like short on one side or the other side, and it's long on top because it's for the lazy client.
Mm-hmm. See, that looks very 80s to me. That looks
right,
like Flock
right.
of Seagulls. So what's old is new again, right?
Awesome. I'm so glad. I'm going to put my hat back on now.
That is a haircut that's been around for a long time, and we are starting to see a lot of the more longer textured haircuts coming back as well. Mm-hmm. And we do a lot of the military style haircut here. We get a lot of that. So it just kind of depends.
Chelsea's really, really great at flat tops, and that kind of seems to be a thing here and there too.
So, you know, I go to Southern California in the winter just to get away from the cold occasionally. Like,
that's
I'll
a
go
great
once,
idea.
One, yeah, I'll go once a month just to kind of defrost. And I'm just shocked at how many barber shops are out there. I mean, it's like Starbucks. There's a barber shop, a traditional barber shop on every corner. Here in Park City, not so much, right? You guys are the only one on Main Street. And then there's a couple other what I would call more beauty salon type places, and then kind of low cost haircutters. As you guys look at Park City and how many barber shops are here, does that excite you? The fact that if you can get the word out, you could probably get a lot of clients. Or how do you look at it from a business standpoint?
Well, when Chelsea and I got into barbering, it wasn't really as trendy. It wasn't really a huge industry for it. And so when we got into it, we were excited, and it has blown up. There are, like you said, barbershops everywhere, and we feel like there is a huge market for it. Men, that's their salon, that's their spa, that's where they go to take time out. And
so is it a different training program for you guys to focus on barbering, or is it pretty much the same training experience and then you just focus after you get out of school for it?
So in Utah, there are two different licenses that you can get. There's a cosmetology license, which will umbrella over the top to encompass barbering, or you can get just a barbering license, which is strictly barbering. We both have the full cosmetology license because when we went to school, there weren't very many barber schools in Utah. But we chose to focus on barbering once we received that license. So the option's there to do either.
And what was it about barbering that made you want to focus on it?
Get to be around guys.
I hate to say it, but guys are more fun. You know? You get to play. You get to talk to your clients. And even if they're having an issue or in a problem, they can always laugh about it and joke about it. And in hair school, they teach you you're a therapist as well, which is awesome, and we love it. But with guys, you get to play with them and kind of counsel them a little bit and make fun of them. And that's kind of where the name came from, Barbarian, is that we get to be a little, I don't know, teasy with our clients. It's great.
Jenna and I have worked together in barbershops for about 5 years now, and we've always kind of played off of each other, and we play with our clients, and we just kind of don't take any crap from anybody, and we've been accused of being barbaric multiple times. So we just decided to kind of run with the name and have fun with it. It's been great.
Well, walk us through the client experience. When someone walks through the doors, what does it look like? What services do you offer, and how much are they?
After you.
So when you walk into Barbarian, I mean, you see a lot of skulls and there's rock music playing. It's just a lot of fun. There's a lot of the blue and red kind of traditional barbershop theme and feel to it. And then we go through an in-depth consultation with our clients to figure out exactly what they want, what kind of maintenance they want to have to upkeep their style. Because if they're only going to be in every 6 months, we don't want to give them something that they need to maintain every month. Then we go through the haircut process. We clean them up with a steam towel, shave the back of the neck with a straight razor so that lasts a long time, and get them scheduled for the next one, style them up, and send them out the door. It's great.
And within that, we make fun of them.
There's a lot of sarcasm involved, yes.
So how much is a haircut there?
Our haircuts range from $30 for a basic clipper cut to $50 for a straight razor head shave.
And what about the straight razor shave?
Just on the face?
Yeah, just on the face.
A full straight razor shave will run you $50.
Do you do any kind of waxing there as well for men?
No.
We don't. We do the eyebrow shaping, but we do everything with a straight razor. Mm-hmm. It's all very traditional.
Thank you for the eyebrow shaping, by the way. Because sometimes with men,
like,
when you see the crazy eyebrows.
Like you again.
Yeah, and coloring. When men try to color their own eyebrows, that can get odd.
Yeah, it can get messy. So leave it to the professionals. Come let us shape them up for you.
We need to wrap up, but that is an interesting question on coloring. Are you seeing men starting to color their hair more now than before? Or it's always been one of those things that's been faux pas for guys.
So I think men are more interested in it. We don't do it at our shop, but I love the salt and pepper. Both of us love the salt and pepper look, so I say au naturel.
Well, as a guy that has a salt and pepper look, I'm glad to hear you say that. We need to wrap it up at this time. Our guests this morning are Gina and Chelsea from Barbarian Barbering Company on Main Street. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
And stay tuned to Mountain Money. We'll be back in a second to wrap up.
Additional funding for programming on KPCW has been provided in part by AMA Waterways and Park City Air Cruise and Travel, 565-4730, parkcityaircruiseandtravel.com, Long Reimer Weiniger Bepler, Estate Planning, Family Law, lrw-law.com, Fred Marshall Painting, painting Park City's home since 1974, fredmarshallpainting.com, and the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, and listeners like you.
Welcome back to Mountain Money. Just a couple seconds. We want to wrap up our show. We want to start off by thanking our great sponsors. They include Mountain West Bank, Berkshire Hathaway Home Services, Utah Properties, San Francisco Design, Jones, Waldo, Holbrook, and McDonough, All Resort Express, Park City Mountain and Apex Residences, and Viridian Park City, Columbus Pacific Properties.
What a great show, Doug. I had a lot of fun hearing from Ryan Starks with Wasatch Caps. What a great opportunity for students there. Then hearing from Bryn Carey, oh my gosh, what he's done with Ski Butlers, that's phenomenal. And then last but not least, great to hear about a new business on Main Street, the Barbarian Barbershop. Sounds like a lot of fun.
It was a fun show today.
Yeah, so make sure you tune in every Monday, 9 a.m., right after NPR News, Mountain Money. We're talking about all things business here every week. Doug, I won't see you next week.
Yeah, no, this is when I start my little getaways to Southern California occasionally.
We'll have a mystery guest host tune in next Monday and find out who's going to try to fill Doug's shoes. You're listening to KPCW Park City. It's time for NPR News.